From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
I am Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, it is Tuesday evening, very late evening, March 31st, 2009.
And this is show 034.
Yeah. Apologize for the lateness, anybody who may have been waiting for... with bated breath on this one.
Yes.
But
you can unbait your breath.
Yeah, we're here now.
We're totally here. Yeah. At least I'm here. I can't speak for you.
No, you're there and I'm here, but we're sort of collectively, you know, as far as they're concerned, we're in their ears.
Yes.
Big board?
Big board.
Big board. Okay. We have 144 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Yay.
Possible progress on Weed and Watch. Not going to say what or if or when. Could be not. And same with McCartney Watch. And don't mean to be cryptic and all. Just we need to maybe have like a seismic type number.
Yeah.
Like a logarithmic.
Like a Richter scale kind of deal.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say the Weed and scale is at like... we'd registered maybe a 2.1.
Yeah.
And about the same on the McCartney scale. If you don't know what we're talking about, go to paulandstorm.com, podcast tab, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah,
Poochie,
blah.
Poochie Corner, in which we discuss people who are discussing us. Nothing big, just the Twitters has been really happening, which
yeah.
is nice.
Yeah.
Which is more of a discussion than really people talking about us, which I like.
Mm-hmm. Let me see. In other news, in the mercantile corner, which is something I've just invented now.
Yeah.
We have opened in our cafe press store, we've opened the, Department of Geek Affairs store because we had such a great response to the awesome, governmental seal that our friend Len Peralta designed for the whole Geek Madness thing. And you can look that up on the site if you don't know what we're talking about, because we're not going through it again. But,
no, but by the way, that was real organic. We did this because so many people asked for it, not the sort of marketing. Hey, so many people were asking for a can opener that was shaped like celery that we had to make one.
Yeah, so we took the seal and now it's available on T-shirts and mugs and thongs and mouse pads and buttons and all that kind of crap. So go to paulandstorm.com. You can find the link to that.
Ready for the fresh?
Sure.
Now I have a few titles like I often do, but if you have anything you wanna, you know, just
let's
go
do
with
a storm title.
Cool.
Let's do a storm title first, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
All right, quick rundown. Rat, Brat, Black. That's one title.
Mm-hmm.
So Like the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the nickname come from? Not what you think it is, uh-huh. I think. And Falcon's Maze.
Oh, of course we're going to go through Falcon's Maze. Like, do you think there would be anything else?
Probably not. And actually, this is sort of interrelated with Rat, Brat, Black. But
greetings,
first, Falcon's
Professor
Maze.
Falcon. Shall we play a game?
Yes. And in fact, it's as simple as that. Flipping channels came across War Games. If you don't know what War Games is, it's a movie. If you don't want to know what kind of movie, I would call it a real proto-geek movie.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of proto-geeks, you know who's totally in War Games?
Oh, that Eddie Deason.
The D's.
Eddie Deason himself, who we discussed in podcast blah, blah, blah.
We're a smooth, well-oiled machine tonight, aren't we?
Well, who really, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, episode 009, I remember that.
You
just
know.
Say blah, 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 and, you know, I'm not going to throw out a number that I'm not sure about.
Because that would have involved, you know, preparation and stuff.
Right. I mean, I wrote Falcon's Maze right down here on my paper, and I think that's
pretty
good.
The sound of you smacking pen to pad.
Yes. Ow! Well, sorry. That hurt. But we digress.
Yes. So you're flipping channels, and you came across to War Games.
Right. And, of course, it's sort of, it's funny, haha, look at the old antiquated computer, because came out in, like, 1983.
Yep.
But really, the stock characters that were in there, particularly the geeks that are really the heroes of the movie, you would recognize every one of them today.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think they basically comprise the cast of The Big Bang Theory, if you've ever seen that show.
They seriously did. They ripped out the Commodore 64s from the set and replaced it with, you know, more up-to-date equipment. And they even talked about firewalls, which was impressive. Like, they had this scene where it's this rapid fire. Did you try this? Did you try that?
Mm-hmm.
And you would recognize all the terminology, and only a little of it would you laugh at.
Yeah.
That's all there was to that. Just
okay.
If you have, I'm pretty sure everyone out there has seen War Games. If you haven't, it's worth the go.
It's a corker, and it stars a young Matthew Broderick at the height of his game.
Ah, and jeteing to the other topic here, opposite him as his love interest, his geek princess, was Ally Sheedy.
Ally Sheedy.
Now,
who over-enunciated all of her words in every role she ever played in the 80s.
What was her thing, you know?
Yeah.
So she was part of this group of young actors that was dubbed the Brat Pack.
Right.
Who were named somewhat derisively after the Rat Pack, the legendary Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. You know who they are.
You know who they are.
You know who they are. And there's even been word of trying to brand the Pauls and experts and others that have sort of coalesced around Barack Obama as the Black Pack, which I think is horrible.
I have never heard that term until just now when you said it. Is that an inside the Beltway thing?
I don't know where I saw it. And it struck me as, oh, look, someone's trying to coin that phrase and they're retreading the same old shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So my fear, like, sort of, there's a group, a growing umbrella of people that you could consider to be internet famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jonathan Coltons, Veronica Belmont, you can go down the list.
Felicia Day, right.
Felicia Day, and, of course, and the problem is, like, not problem, but there is not yet a name for this group of people.
Right.
And inevitably, if it becomes a big enough cultural thing,
mm-hmm.
it's going to get named.
Yeah.
And I think that it would be best if people from within the community came up with a name before it's branded, you know, the, you know, Inkjet Pack, you know, or some horrible derivative of Rat Pack once again.
Right, right.
I don't have any ideas, really. You know, the term Twitterati is out there, but that is kind of...
If it was like 10 years ago, it could have been the 6400 Bod Squad.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Or taken from War Games, the Whopper. But that's really just something to think about.
Sure. You know? So there's our little audience participation bit is... come up with a better name for the internet famous types than the fifth column? No, not fifth column, but the fourth estate we'll come up with. That was, you know, some number and noun.
The sixth estate. That's who it is.
That's bloggers.
The sixth estate. Yeah.
Okay.
It skipped a couple of estates.
Sure.
But I guess it's kind of hard because there isn't any one thing that all of these folks fit under, you know,
mm-hmm.
like the Rat Pack, they all traveled together and, you know, hoard and gambled and made movies of varying qualities.
Whereas this group, all they have is in common is they know how to work a keyboard and a Mac.
Right. Well, oh God, no, not the Mac Pack. No, do not let that happen.
That's where I was leading. You beat me to it.
Don't go there. Just don't go there.
That'd be pretty awesome. Hodgman could totally be the Frank Sinatra of that group.
Yeah, he seems to be evolving in that direction.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's going to stick. That is so going to stick. Oh,
it's totally going to stick. Copyright 2009, Paul and Storm LLC.
I don't know whether
right here. That shit's not Creative Commons, baby. That shit's copyright.
10-minute mark was 20 seconds ago. Oh, how about that? Close.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's done and done. We don't even need to have a poll, I don't think.
No, I think that's pretty well covered, unless we have a poll like, you know, MacPack, gay or extremely gay.
Well.
And when I say gay, I don't mean in a homosexual way. Again, as I always refer to it these days, I mean in that third grader term of derision that you don't really know what it means way.
Right. We used to have a term for that, and I think it was specific to, like, the fourth and fifth graders of my elementary school.
Oh, what was that?
And you would dismiss something and you would say, oh, that's so common.
Oh, we've had this discussion. Did we do this on the podcast?
No, I think it's we may have been like 10 years ago on some road trip.
Right.
You know, or late at night, you know. And yeah, like there were these terms, these jargons, these slangs that we always had. One of them was you dismiss something as being common.
Mm-hmm.
Referring to one's male genitalia as your schween.
Mm-hmm.
That was big.
Assuming you had male genitalia.
Right. Well, or you could refer to someone else's schween.
Gotcha.
Or you could, you know, even
but
if
I
you
bet
were
it,
female.
I bet it was nothing but boys that used that term, though, right?
Oh, naturally. I don't think I ever heard any of our, even the tomboyists of friends did not use schween.
Yeah.
And I don't see why they would or we would.
Yeah, it's a male thing, like studying the Torah.
Right. Schween equals Torah. There we have it.
going to shul. I don't know why I'm turning all Judaica on you. And and sexist Judaica on top of that. By the way, sexist Judaica is the front runner for the title, I believe.
Yeah, well, it's getting close to Passover. It brings out the Jew in all of us.
that's sexist Judaica is our emo band. Our debut CD is the Jew in all of us.
That's right.
I have a topic having nothing to do with anything other than somebody suggested I talk about it on the podcast, and I thought it was a damn fine idea.
Okay.
And that is the fact that this past weekend, my kids not just requested, demanded that we take them, well, you know, not demanded, but strongly suggested that we take them to a place up here in the eastern Pennsylvania area called Giggleberry Fair.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Which
I saw the traffic on this.
As I described on the Twitter, Giggleberry Fair is basically a Chuck E. Cheese that lives in a nicer neighborhood.
Now, is it a chain or is it just like a ultra local phenomenon?
I got the impression it was a one-off, but I wouldn't be surprised if it either has become a chain or is growing or they want to make it a chain. It's
now, is it the same sort of mix of like video games and participation games and animatronics type
of
thing?
No, well, here's the thing. There's no animatronics.
That's kind
of so it's missing that. It's larger than your average Chuck E. Cheese, which is basically like Chuck E. Cheese is basically an excuse to sell crappy pizza because, you know, that's where they really make their mark.
Yeah.
This place, it's in a little shopping district called Peddler's Village, which is one of those sort of manufactured rustic shop. You know, it's, you know, in some rural area and they take a few square blocks, well, not square, but a few blocks worth of area, and they make it all into crafty stores and women's clothing places and
haberdasheries.
You know, just places, you know, there's that. Well, it's like there's the hat store and there's the paper store and there's the crystals store and, you know, that sort of thing.
The place you can make your own candles by dipping your arm into a vat of wax.
Not quite that
not like colonial
low tech. It's basically where, you know, the upper middle class and lower upper class types come to go get their duvet covers.
Now, in an atmosphere like that, is Giggleberry, I understand the Giggleberry part, the fair, is it just fair or is it like the Ren Fair?
No, it's just the name of the place, but it's not an actual fair. It's like some marketing idiot said, well, we'll call it a fair, so it gives the sense. And the other reason it goes by, I'm guessing here, but it's an educated guess, they call it Giggleberry Fair because it was basically built around an indoor carousel that was restored and was an attraction at this Peddler's Village place. And while I haven't read up on it, my impression from what I could see from displays and such was that the carousel was there first, and then somebody bought up all the space around the carousel and turned it into this sort of oversized play place. I mean, so they also serve crappy food.
Now, did it end up being as fun as your kids imagined it would be, or was it a cosmic letdown?
You want to know what? It was a little more fun than I expected. Here's the setup. And instead of making the crappy food their sort of raison d'être.
Yep.
They have some video games, not a ton, probably fewer video games than, say, a Chuck E. Cheese, but roughly the same size. You know, there's some, it's all ticket-based stuff,
right?
You know, where you spend your tokens and you play the different crane games and the skee ball and things
right,
like
until
that.
Until you have enough to get your cassette recorder.
Exactly. Or at least your whoopee cushion.
Yep.
So they can have all of that. And then they have two different little play areas that you have to pay money to get into. One is dedicated to sort of the little children, and it's got, you know, the little train that you can climb in and out of, and, you know, cushy floors and places to bounce around and not kill yourself.
Right, vats of ketchup that can just be consumed at will.
Exactly. And then there's sort of the main play area, which costs a little more to get into, and that is roughly like, you know, the indoor play places at, say, a Chick-fil-A or some McDonald's's.
Where
you can climb around or in a Chuck E. Cheese, you can climb around the different pathways and have a trail.
Yeah, I'm starting to get an overall impression that this is sort of like, you know, a laser tag type environment.
Well, yes, that's
interactive stuff.
Exactly. That's the cool thing. So there's this whole Kid Habitrail section, which is like three stories tall. And built into it, in the center of it, there's this large atrium area. And here's where I think they got it right.
Is where the giggling happens.
Yes. Is they've got, in the atrium area on the second floor, sort of balcony, on either side, they have these air guns sort of bolted into the railing. And you fill them up with these foam balls that are roughly the size of racket balls. They're sort of like a stiffer Nerf, like hard enough that you can, hard enough that they'll travel when you throw them or shoot them out of these guns, but not so hard that anybody's going to get hurt.
By the way, put a stiffer Nerf in the running.
Stiffer Nerf? Okay.
Yeah.
So they found this perfect alchemy of foam that's like soft, that it's never going to hurt anybody, but you can still like wing it.
Yep.
And they're all over the place. And you can load them into these guns and shoot them like air cannons, and you can throw them around. And there's a big bin at the top of this atrium, and every 10 minutes or so, it will, like, alarms will go off and lights will flash, and it will dump all over everyone. And they have mesh canvas bags that you can carry around and gather up these balls. And it's really, actually, it's sort of like safe laser tag for six-year-olds, but instead of lasers, it's these balls.
What you're saying is basically it's a great haven to express all of your repressed violence.
Exactly. I'm really pissed they didn't have something like this when we were kids because
we had the place with the knives. But
all we had, we had Mumbledy Pegs was all we had. That was a very short-lived chain in the Northeast because a couple dumb kids died.
Right.
But nonetheless, Giggleberry Fair, as stupid and terrible and awful as the name is, I kind of enjoyed myself. Not for the 4 hours that my kids did.
Right.
But
you know what the secret is?
What's the secret?
They bury their bodies.
This is true.
knows what happened.
They're tied in well enough with the mob. They know how to clean up their messes.
Exactly. You know, there's probably kids buried in the back that have 8 or 10 of those harmless balls that, you know, just happen to, you know, lodge down their throats.
Back when they were testing finding the right exactly. substance, and they started out with steel, and it was not quite so successful.
Steel rods were not quite right.
And then they had that steel ball. Did you ever see the movie Phantasm?
Sure, yeah, the one with the
that steel ball
that
with like
the
knife
ball.
That stuck out. Yeah, they had a bunch of those. Those didn't work out so well either.
They had to cut the drowning room out of the original plan.
Yeah, that one didn't quite go over so well.
Right,
I'm not sure how that
was, yeah.
I don't know how it made it past the planning stages, but
I thought it would have been fun the way they had the door set up. It was 12 feet over the surface of the pool.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. You mean the empty pool?
Yeah, yeah, that was that was the you thought you were going to drowning room.
Yeah. the old watch that last step room. Yeah. Where I was leading with all of that was I was going to have another audience participation thing of where was the cool place when you were little, defining little as anywhere from say 5 to 12, where was the cool place you always wanted your parents to take you to? And maybe they never took you, but even better, maybe they took you, but very rarely, either because it was far away or they just couldn't stand it. Like,
I know the place.
Where was that place? Where was yours?
Well, it was more of I imagined it would be awesome and great, but I'm sure it would have been horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Never went there. There was a skateboard bowl that had been built in my town.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really too young for skateboarding at the time. And when I grew older, I was horrible at skateboarding and hated it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I thought it was so cool. You would go by and you would see these kids popping up and down in the skateboard bowl. And it was only open for maybe 6 months because they did have the knives and the iron bolts instead of the fluffy optimal Nerf balls.
Sure.
So that was sort of the place. Every other place I ever wanted to go, my parents either took me or I got to. So I was a lucky kid.
Yeah. Mine is a little more obscure. I thought about this for a while. When I was extremely young, living in upstate New York, and we're talking like 4 or 5 years old, they used to run a commercial for Gaslight Village. It had it was a little tough to tell what it was from the commercial when you're that young, but they had a cool old-timey theme song that involved like a Vodeo Doe and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just sort of entranced with this commercial, and I would always bug my mom to take me to Gaslight Village.
Yep.
And if I recall correctly, I believe Gaslight Village was basically a strip mall. And it may have been the pub that was located in the strip mall as well. I'm not sure. But I remember heaping disappointment because I don't know what I expected, but I certainly didn't expect, like, you know, a hair salon and a pub and like a nail place. And
they made it too enticing.
They did. They did. Oh, and there was like the mom and pop hardware store. But
speaking of commercials that drew you to places, I never went there, and you I know you remember this commercial as well, and we used to rib one of our old bandmates mercilessly about this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hotel in New York called the Milford Plaza.
Yes.
And they had this very catchy, well-produced, slick commercial set to the tune of the Lullaby of Broadway, where they creatively took out Lullaby of Broadway and inserted the Milford Plaza.
And in the center
is the Milford Plaza. And it just seemed like, wow, this is real New York
That place was where it was at.
Yeah, yeah. There are, you know, dancing girls that greet you there, and, you know, you pull up in a limo.
Yeah, the bellboy taps up and juggles your luggage.
It didn't jive at all with my New York experiences. Like, I had my grandparents on my dad's side, my nanny and papa, lived in Brooklyn. And we would go into the city every once in a while, but this was mostly the New York City of the 70s into the 80s.
This was Ed Koch's New York City.
Yeah, this was the was everything not, smells like urine.
It was not a magical place.
No, and imagine the Milford Plaza at the time, you know, half of it was a place you would not want to go. I'm coming up with no metaphor.
A place was, you would go if you wanted to, say, do intravenous drugs?
Yes, yes. That's a story for another time. Night trip to New York when in high school.
Okay.
But that's for another time,
because
that will take too long.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was another one. Never went there. And also the Poconos commercials.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was always a couple in a champagne bathtub.
The old champagne glass bathtub, hot tub or bathtub. Yeah, that was always a draw when you were little.
All right.
I had one more thing to cover very quickly before we're done, and that is we wish to apologize to those of you who were hoping and waiting for it. We do not have a song for this round of the Masters of Song Foo. We had limited schedule available this week, and the time we had available to it, we put our heads to it and came up with, frankly, nothing. And we figured better to do no song at all than to try and cram something out that was terrible and crap.
Yeah, gotta juice up the batteries a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. Well, we've been busy boys this past month, too, so...
All right, I'm going to save the other topics for another time.
Put them in your topic pocket.
Yep, topic pocket.
And let's see, very quickly, going over what's coming up, if I can see my schedule from here, we have April's so far away from me. We're going to be in Iowa all of next week. On the 8th, we're going to be in Dubuque at the Diamond Joe Casino. On the 9th, we're going to be at the 4th Street Theater in Des Moines. And the 10th and 11th, we will be at the Penguins Comedy Club, he said over-enunciatingly, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And then on the 17th, we are going to be at Tanner's in Kimberly, Wisconsin, along with Sean Morey. The 23rd and 24th, we are going to be at the Lula Lounge in Toronto with Jonathan Colton.
And Canadian ketchup.
Yeah. And then come May, we are in Dallas, San Diego, Los Angeles in mid-May, again, all with Jonathan Colton. And a very cool thing will be happening in May if we play our cards right, but we can't tell you about it yet. And then on the 23rd, we're in Galesburg, Illinois with Dan St. Paul. So lots of stuff. Oops, coming up as I bang my microphone. Go to paulandstorm.com to find out anything and everything you care to about us.
And to become a minion, because we're about to inaugurate a new group, a new batch of minions.
That's right. Minion 150 and beyond will have a different designation.
So last chance to get the old designation. And so you can do that. And I'm Storm.
And I am Paul.
And we have been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Left hand doesn't know what the right one's doing.
Go do things.
For $43 per person, discover why we are the Lullaby of Broadway.
The Milford Plaza is the Lullaby.